It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome in to another episode of Bare Bones Offseason Edition. As always, I am Mason West, and this time, lucky enough to be joined by Special Desk. I just call him Q. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Quentin Crisco. You can find me on Twitter at BuckHisStats. You can listen to me at the Shaving Points podcast and also on Bears on Tap, where you can find my writing.
I figure I might as well wear my Shaving Points podcast hat that you,
gave me.
I don't really rock the dad hat super well, but, you know, I'll do it for this.
I like it. It looks fly.
So, good news and bad news. We got a lot of news to kind of talk about before we dive into the mock here. Some of it's cool. Some of it's not. Get the nitty-gritty out of the way. Jalen Carter, right? One of the top prospects that the Bears were looking at. I know he was number one on my board. I have him over Will Anderson as someone that I was really interested, wanted on this team. And, you know, he's got some legal troubles he's got to deal with. There's not a lot that I want to specifically talk about this outside of saying, hey, this is here. And I think we just need more information. We just don't have that. And there's a lot of time between now and when the actual draft happens.
Yeah. I mean, it sucks. The way that all this has come out, I mean, and we'll see where it goes. You know, I mean, we don't know the full story. We don't know all the details, and I have a really hard time saying anything about, like, you can't draft him now, or like, you can still draft, like, either side of it. It's all gray area, you know, but it sucks because it potentially, I mean, for me, I looked at this as a three person first round, essentially, because I figured the Bears weren't going beyond four. Probably at least two quarterbacks are going to be taken in the top four. Yeah. And so I was like, Jalen Carter, Tyree Wilson, Will Anderson, any of those guys I'm happy with, probably in that order for me. But I keep going back and forth on Will Anderson or Tyree Wilson, which I like better. But Carter was a clear one, you know, and on tape he still is, but there's so many questions now on the nothing on the field, on off the field stuff, which you hate to have a question come up about it ever. And like, it's not even for me, it's not even the questions about who he is as a person as much as that. Does this not rock you to your core? Like, how do you bounce back from going through something like this? How does it impact you in your everyday life? Like, is he going to be the same person he even was? You know, that's where my questions kind of lie.
That's a valid point. I mean, people change as individuals from less than this, right? And, yeah. And this is already a hard enough process as it is to be on one of the biggest stages. I mean, he made the choice to come back and be at the combine, even though he wasn't going to be participating anyway, but to be there with the rest of the guys in the D-line group. So, I mean, that's hard for, I don't know that I could do that, honestly, with all this going on. But so got to give him some props on that. But at the same time, it's real touch and go. We'll see what happens. And yeah, like you just said, it just sucks. It's unfortunate. We've seen some things like this before. I'm not going to put them all in the same categories, but basically we've seen, right, in draft individuals drop because of something that pops up in the draft process, you know, in the pre-draft process. And some of them turn out fine, amazing football players, amazing people. And then in other instances, you see crash and burn and you never hear from them again. So, or you hear from them for the wrong reasons, a la Antonio Brown. I'll totally blast him because he's insane, doing all the wrong stuff.
Well, hey, he owns an Arena Football League team now, so. That's fun.
On the more positive note, the Bears are in the news for good reason, which is kind of weird around draft time. Either I'm used to not having first round picks. I'm used to the Bears just kind of being there and being like, all right, we'll pick eventually. But they're the talk of the town, right? They are the bell of the ball for the combine, whether it's teams trying to talk to them about potential trades, Whether it's just the fact that they have the number one pick, you keep getting flashes of Ryan Poles and Eberflus. They're some of the first GM head coach combos that get talked about in the morning on NFL Network on ESPN. One of my favorite things that came up was when they were talking about how they're putting prospects through darts and putt-putt to see how competitive they are. I know that's really meatball-y, but I absolutely love that. I mean, I know I'm the kind of guy that I want to win whatever that I'm playing. I don't care what it is. So I think that's cool. You do see a bit of, is someone just kind of going through the motions and not taking this seriously, or are they just a competitive person by nature?
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I think it's an awesome idea. I mean, obviously, you probably can't read too much into it, but like that's where the fine details and stuff are like the like, because when you're going through this, they're gonna be picking between a prospect that they have graded like on a scale of 10, a 9.03 versus a 9.02. You know, it's the little things like how they reacted to that or how, like, you know, competitive they were in that moment that can kind of push one guy ahead of the other, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Like, and you're absolutely right. I mean, the differences between these players, I mean, at the beginning here, you listed three players, Jalen Carter, Tyree Wilson, Will Anderson. I mean, we are nitpicking in terms of the differences between like a Tyree Wilson and a Will Anderson. If you get either of those players, I don't know that you're mad about it. You know, I had a conversation today about some of the wide receivers. Like if you got a JSN versus a Zay Flowers, I'm not mad about either one of those players, but I definitely have a preference one way or the other. So you got to figure out ways to really separate outside of just, hey, this one ran a 40.05 seconds faster.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, you're talking about the blue chips of the draft. Like when you're this high, not needing to go for quarterback, there are just so many guys who you can consider there that like I'm not even considering. Like, I mean, you can throw Paris Johnson in the mix up there, like Brian Brzee, like guys who are just freaks of freaks athletically, and you'd be thrilled to have them too, you know.
That's one of the things that sucks that I'm watching. I was just watching the combine before we popped on here, and unfortunately I'll have to go back and watch what Will Anderson does because we might run a little past what he's doing. But you start watching all these guys and you're like, can I just have all of them? can I just get all of these players onto this team? And you just can't do that, obviously.
Well, yeah, this is the first year where I've ever like actually done a project of going through and watching tape on, you know, I've watched, I think 89 or 90 guys now. And it's like, I fall in love with a third of them, you know, and you can't have that many guys. There's no way that many of those guys are going to work out either, but it's like, you fall in love with these guys' tapes so often that it makes it really difficult. Like, I can only imagine being an actual scout and trying to decide which guys you're pounding the table for versus which guys you're letting kind of pass you by.
Well, that's a good transition for us, 'cause we did have to make some decisions in this mock draft that we're doing today. As a reminder, and a lot of people are not going to listen to this anyway, but I'm going to say it every single time. Danny and I, at least, and as you notice, Danny's not here. He's got real life stuff he's got to be doing today. But we cannot pick the same players. So as you can see, this is our third mock draft. So I have already made 20 plus selections. So if your favorite player is not on here, maybe I already picked them. Q doesn't have that shackle. He got to go through and select people as he saw fit through his. We both use PFF mock just because it's really easy to use. It's streamlined. I think it's one of the better ones out there. And of course, this is 100% accurate. We have to remind you, this is what the Bears are going to absolutely be doing. So obviously, tear us apart in the comments as you listen here. Yeah, I gotta love like the stupid PowerPoint stuff, right? So actually, you get to go first. So this is the trade you did. Kind of talk through your thought process. Why the Colts? Why did you send them an extra fifth?
It was the general idea of, you know, not wanting to go beyond four. Four was, I had a ceiling or a floor, I guess you'd call it, as far as how far I was willing to go down in the draft, and that was number four. And the extra fifth was just to get the extra third. I mean, that was it's what the mock draft required of me to do. So it was the cheapest pick they'd accept to get that extra pick in the top 100. And I wanted that. I love a lot of this draft from like day two, basically, I guess would be the best way to say it. I love a lot of the day two guys, and I wanted more of them. So I'll give up a fifth to get back in the top 100.
Well, that absolutely makes sense. And we're a little more realistic too. Obviously, with some of the mock drafts out there, there's some crazy stuff, crazy trades pop around. So throwing a little extra cheddar their way definitely helps out. And that leads ultimately to who you're picked first. Talk us through your first pick in this draft, a man we just talked about.
Yeah, Jalen Carter. So if I could preface this, actually, I'll go through my free agency signings because I did a full free agency projection in order to do this because it's really hard to honestly try to put together a mock draft before free agency happens. So first off, I added Zach Allen on the interior D-line. Guy who can play a little nose in a one gap scheme and play a little three tech. He's interchangeable. He can play either one. And I also signed Derek Nnadi there as just a run stuffer type depth guy. And he can maybe start for you if you need him to, like if the draft didn't fall your way and you didn't get the D tackle you wanted, you still have some safety there by having Nnadi. And I signed Marcus Davenport to play the edge, Bobby Okereke at linebacker, Daniel Brunskill to fill in that hole at left guard, because I'm assuming that Whitehair wouldn't be here or wouldn't be reliable health-wise. Because I'm not sure I want to go into the next season saying we have to have Cody Whitehair stay healthy for this to work. And I want to get a depth guy there because – that gives you the flexibility in this draft. There are a lot of offensive linemen I like who can play tackle or guard. And it gives you the ability to kind of be interchangeable there. And Mike McGlinchey at right tackle. They're going to sign a right tackle. Whether it's McGlinchey, McGarry, or Juwan Taylor, I think they're going to get one of those three. I think most likely is McGlinchey. And I also added Tony Pollard and Alan Lazard. So that leaves me with a hole, not a hole, but a below standard starter in Derek Nnadi at the three tech spot, Jalen Carter's best three tech in the draft. In revisionist history, I might go Tyree Wilson here, or I might stick with Carter. I don't know. Like we said at the top of the show, we need more information before we can decide that. But I've been putting my opinion out there about Jalen Carter for 3 months now. I think he is the best player in this draft. I think a lot of people think he's the best player in this draft. So not to say that that is, you know, some rare opinion, but I think it's an easy pick with it once you take the off the field stuff out of it.
Yeah. And I agree. Like, you know, obviously we also did, you sent me this before we found this out. Let's also put that out there. That might shift it a little bit, of course, but I agree. I'm right there with you. I still think he's literally the best player in this draft. And as we said at the beginning, there's a long time between now and when the draft actually happens. If somebody was salivating over Jalen Carter as the player, you know, they could do, there's a lot that they can do, whether it's talking to him, talking to agents, talking to people around him, talking to cops. All these teams have their own like private investigators and all this stuff. There's tons that's going to go on between now and then. And the decision that is best for the franchise will be made, but on March 2nd is not really the time to cross this individual off the board, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I actually heard not to dive back into it too much, but I heard an interesting thing on Cap and Jay Hood this morning about the 911 call that was made after the crash. You could hear in the background a few different people, I think it was, saying like, JC, get out of here. Jalen, just go.
Oh, wow.
Which is, you know, again, it doesn't take away what happened, what he may have done, but like, it's just, it adds more context to what we have heard.
Yeah. I do think it's very easy to sit in our judgment chairs off on the side without being in a situation and being able to say what we would or wouldn't do. So It's definitely some interesting context to take into account. But that brings it to my trade. I opted to dive a little further. I went to the Texans. I think went to the Colts and another one. This one, I had an offer I could not refuse. The Panthers called me up, number one, and they were going to give me Brian Burns along with their number nine, as well as 2 seconds in this draft. They got from one of their previous trades. I just don't even remember off the top. Now, obviously, what I will say, owner Dave Tepper is super aggressive. The veteran coach and not being good. So I think whether it was his comments or Reich's comments, that they're going to groom a quarterback. They got to get up in the draft to do so. And if you're going to make a swing like that, why not go to number one overall to do that? Some might say, hey, Mason, if the Panthers wanted to trade Brian Burns, why wouldn't you have done that at the deadline? Because that was some rumors that were going around at the time. Or why would you start a young quarterback and give away some weapons that make his life easier? I would say it's very different leveraging Brian Burns to get the QB you want than trading Burns for a mid or late for pick, right? Because most of the teams that are going to be trading for Brian Burns at the deadline were probably teams that were at least in some contention. And it also saves future draft capital this way that the Panthers can use to build around their quarterback. Because if I'm going down to nine, I'm going to ask for more than this, to be completely honest. And, you know, would also say that while a dominant edge can be certainly helpful, you know, than a young QB and other, there are other positions that are more impactful. For example, you're not going to trade a DJ Moore. DJ Moore is more directly going to help whatever young quarterback you go get. And also, you really just need the quarterback before you can worry about building too much. Yes, edge is one of the most important positions, but at the end of the day, quarterback is the most important position. So while not likely, I'm still going to go with it. But that then brings up my actual pick when I traded down to nine. Yeah, right. Actually, yeah, what do you think of that trade? I mean,
the way that I'm thinking about it is the Rams offered the Panthers two first round picks. Now, future first round, I think it was like a 25 and 26 or something first round pick. You know, it was because the Rams don't have picks. So it had to be something like that, I believe. They offered them two first round picks for Brian Burns at the trade deadline, and the Panthers said no. So they see him as worth two first round picks. So by that logic, you're getting four first round picks back for number one overall. Like, I think that is a great trade. And I mean, cause you got a one this year, one next year, and you got a guy who he might not be a blue chip edge rusher, like, but he is a top tier guy still. Like, I don't think he's a complete game wrecker, like a Nick Bosa, or like a Myles Garrett, but he's close, about as close as you can get without being one.
Yeah, that was my thought process for the most part as well. And that allowed me to move a little further back in the draft to the mid round and take this gentleman here, Quentin Johnson, wide receiver at TCU. So he's 6'4", 212 pounds. He didn't have a lot of production but in 2022, he really stepped it up with 60 receptions for just over 1,000 yards and 6 touchdowns. We will know in a few days, but most think he's going to run in the 4.3 area. And one of his calling cards is his athleticism. I mean, he's just an athletic freak, but combining it with his size is really what makes him interesting and would give the Bears that true X that they just haven't had since Alshon Jeffrey, I guess. It appears to be a prototypical, like I said, X receiver, could step in immediately and be a number one in a lot of different offenses, really excels against zone coverage and has an explosive first step to reduce cushion off of coverage pretty quickly. He's good in catch and run situations and just gets yards after the catch. Has violent, explosive lateral vertical movements. Biggest issue is that what he does against man and his lack of production prior. Against press man, he did allow defensive backs to get into his chest a bit and have an opportunity of slowing him down the line of scrimmage. He can be better at contested catches. He had 8 drops, which is not great for your big X, and he ran a pretty limited route tree. Now, with that description, that might give you kind of maybe shades of Kevin White, which makes all Bears fans shudder. Keep in mind, Kevin White's biggest issue at the end of the day was the injuries, right? They stacked up, they sapped him of his athleticism. It wasn't necessarily the size, it wasn't the athleticism, his original athleticism, it wasn't the limited route tree that was really the issue. And yes, you can look in terms of that productivity, that also, you know, he only had that 1 year, but it's, you take a swing for the fence right here in the middle round. Are you going to go for production? Are you going to go for traits? We also know that the Bears are big trait people. You see, like, they constantly are now showing off their analytics. If there was a YouTube video where they had a bunch of kids come in and they were just showing how scouts work and all this, and they showed the analytic department. And one of the things they really promoted was, hey, here are here's the equations, here's what we're looking at, and our top guys, Justin Fields is up there, Chase Claypool is up there, et cetera. So that this is important for them as well. If he can really develop, get that route tree growing, I'm thinking prime AJ Green.
I like that comp, actually. I think that's, I mean, there's a lot of ifs baked into it, but I think that's one of the better comps I've heard for him, if I'm being completely honest, because he's a weird guy to try to find comps for, because he's such a tall player, but lanky and fast, like, and his play style isn't like most receivers you see with that type of height. It's just different, which isn't a bad thing. Like, the NFL is all about collecting as many different types of athletic freaks as you can, right? And that's what you do with him. I'll be honest, I love the pick here. I made some similar, like, I did like 20 mocks to try to find the one that I like the most, and testing out stuff like trading out to that 7 to 9 range. And I ended up sitting there saying, like, there were some times where I took Paris Johnson or like some other guys, like maybe a Miles Murphy somewhere or something, or a Van Ness. But really where I ended up was I love the O-line depth in this class. So I'm not going to take Paris Johnson that early, because there are just so many tackles. When I have 5 top 100 picks, there's so many tackles I'm going to have a shot at, right?
Yeah.
And edge rusher. There are plenty of guys in the top 50 where I expect to be again, like after a trade down, that I like. You know, they're not Tyree Wilson or Will Anderson, but I still think they're pretty darn good. And that left me sitting there saying, if I'm sitting here in the back at the top 10, what's the one position that is the most scarce in this draft that has a high level talent in it? And that's receiver with Quentin Johnson. It just makes a lot of sense.
And there's a comment here, Windy City Skyclimber, why not Addison? Quentin Johnson's a copy of Chase Claypool. I would disagree with that, just because right now, so far, what we've seen from Chase in a Bears uniform is an inability to go up and get the ball. While they might have similar body types and maybe they will test similarly or something of that nature. First of all, I believe that Quentin Johnson is going to be faster than Chase Claypool. That's another thing too, but I just don't see that. And then you said also, I assume this is Tyree Wilson. I believe he was gone when I picked here. And also I just traded for Brian Burns. Now you can't have enough edge rushers, of course, but at the same time, there's also so many holes on this Bears team that, like you said, you have Zay Flowers, you have Addison, you have some other receivers, but it's such a stark drop off, especially for an X, like a true big get up and get it also with speed guy. And we're seeing that now, right? With free agency, like what free agent would you sign? Who's going to be your number one receiver? It doesn't exist because those guys don't get to free agency. So you have to draft them. And that's why I opted to go this route.
So to the point of he's the same as Claypool, I think he's really different than Claypool. I think he has – Quentin Johnson has some impressive agility ability, like that I saw on tape. He, good with in-breakers and curl routes, stopping routes, and just – he is able to break suddenly in ways that I don't think Claypool can. Claypool didn't do agility drills when he was coming out in the draft. I think Quentin Johnson is going to, and I don't know that he will, but I feel like he should, because I think it's something that he can really separate himself from the class with, because guys that tall can't usually break like he does. That tall and fast, I should say, can't usually break like he does. It's a rare trait that he has the ability to really harness, like him on slant routes and those quick cutters is extremely dangerous.
Oh, absolutely. I'm really curious to see how he tests in these coming days. And like, yes, he does need to work on the drops and things like that, but I couldn't agree more. He really is not Chase Claypool. It's, if you look, go that route, it's just because you're looking at a box score, a height, a weight, and maybe that's kind of where you're stopping.
Yeah. I mean, height, weight, speed, I can see the comparison, but beyond that, I think their play styles are pretty different.
Oh, so I get to go again, just in terms of how the picks fell.
It's a snake.
And I ended up taking Mazi Smith, who actually is not testing today. I was a little bummed about that. I wanted to see how he ran. He's a large individual out of Michigan, 6'3", 326 pounds, just a big, strong cat, like just big. Run defense is blue chip. I mean, if you want a stopper, someone who's going to wreck the run game, it's this guy. He can take up multiple gaps. Very impressive lateral movement for someone of his size. And again, that's why I wanted to see that, because I wanted to see him go over those backs today and how he did it, handled it. He has pass rush upside. If he had a little more pass rush currently, I think he'd be a true first rounder. But that's why I think I was able to snag him here at pick 39, because he doesn't have that right now. Shorter arm, so he can definitely get held off at times. He'll get laid off the ball. Admittedly, he's best in a 3-4. But I think he can play nose tackle in a 4-3 simply due to his ability to move and the athleticism that he does have. I kind of put him at a Dontari Poe type if I had to pick someone, but I'm hoping that it's just a titch more athletic, and hopefully maybe even the Bears could throw a couple of those fullback passes that Dontari Poe is able to do with the Chiefs.
I mean, I love this pick. I personally do not think Mozzie Smith is going to get out of the first round. I think he might even land in the top 20. Oh, wow. I think he's just been overlooked by a lot of the analysts out there because of nitpicking. But like when you get a guy with his type of athleticism at his size, I don't care if he even knows how to play football. I just think he's that freakish. I mean, obviously that's a huge exaggeration, but like, yeah. He's good against the run. Like you said, he has pass rush upside. Like, what are we doing here when we look at this guy's athleticism to say he's 32 teams are going to pass him up, you know? Like, I'm trying to pull it up here. So 22 reps of bench press at 325, not 225, 325 pounds.
Wild.
Vertical jumps 33 inches at like 330-something pounds. Broad jumped over nine feet and clocked at a 4.41 shuttle and a 6.953 cone. Like, that is, those are like record breaking numbers if he did it at the combine. At 330 pounds as a nose tackle, not at 280 pounds like Kalijah Kancey. 330, and that's not a knock on Kalijah Kancey. It's just how ridiculous Mozzie Smith is. He is utterly ludicrous. There's a lot he has to clean up. But, like, when he makes splash plays, you put your life on taking that guy. Like, when you see him on tape, it's just that type of upside I don't see lasting. But if it does, I love him here. Love it.
I was really excited about this. I got a little worried with the system. But then as I watched more tape of him and how he moved, I was like, I don't care. Just put him in. He just plays football. It's fine. He'll play whatever you need him to play.
Exactly.
And now we're moving on to Q's pick, but oh, wait, one moment. We are labeling him a cheater McCheaterson because he actually opted to do a second trade, which was not allowed in this draft. That was going to be our next one.
I'm sorry. I didn't read the rules fine enough then.
But, you know, guest is the only, you know, in theory mock you're going to do on bare bones. So we're going to let it slide. But talk us through this draft trade you did with the Patriots.
So in most of the mocks I tried, Mozzie Smith wasn't there at 39. That's who I wanted. And outside of that, like, the board just, like I said, I love a lot of the day two guys in this draft, but the way the board ends up stacking, you end up with a lot of 3-4 pass rushers sitting there at this pick. A lot of guys who just aren't great fits, or like Josh Downs is nice, but like, I don't know if he's top 40 pick nice. And I just end up sitting there saying over and over, fine, I'll take one of these tackles who I could get at, you know, 50. So why not trade down to a little before 50? So that's what I wanted to do. I mean, I really didn't care that much about what I got back for it. Just the fact that I was getting something back for moving down. So I picked up a 4th round pick and a 6th round pick this year and a 4th round pick next year. It's probably doomed because trading with the Patriots tends to be a bad idea, but we'll find out.
Yeah, I like that you were able to, you know, you didn't move too far back, but getting both those 4ths this year and the next year, especially with a draft class that just has a lot of that, like we talked about this and you said this specifically, some deep edge talent as well as some deep offensive line talent. being able to pick up those extra picks up in that range is going to be great for this year. So I like this trade. But talk us through now who you actually picked. And I talked about, I think, last week, this tackle, and I was excited about him. So let's hear it.
Yeah. So like I was saying, when I was going through my free agents, I want to be it. So at this point, I have Mike McGlinchey at right tackle, Tevin Jenkins at right guard. Center is a question. Maybe I have Lucas Patrick there. Maybe I draft a guy, but I have flexibility if I draft a guy to plug and play. And at right guard, I signed, what was his name? The guy from the 49ers, the 49ers starting right guard or left guard. So he was a okay left guard. Like, you could get by with him, but really I knew that I had bookend my tackles figured out, kind of. Like, how much you trust Braxton Jones is up for debate, but that's why I love Matt Bergeron here, because Matt Bergeron can play left tackle. He can play left guard. Mm-hmm. He can play right guard. He can play right tackle. This idea that I keep coming back to, this idea of, like, I look at what the Packers have done with their offensive line over the years with Elgton Jenkins and Yash Nijman and a handful of other guys like Zach Tom, who were extremely versatile coming out of college. And that ended up giving them opportunities to play, because you're going to have injuries, right? You're someone's going to go down and you're going to need to fill a spot. But has the kid ever played there? I don't know. Matt Bergeron can fill in any of those four spots wherever you need him to. And if Braxton Jones is really struggling and taking like a sophomore slump, you got Matt Bergeron ready to step in at left tackle, and you can slide someone else in at the left guard spot then. So I love Matt Bergeron here. He's a feisty run blocker, really gonna, and he has the movement traits to fit the Bears running scheme. Probably better as a pass protector inside, but there's nothing about him on tape that says it's not fixable at tackle. It's mostly hand placement, aim, and some inconsistencies in footwork, which when his footwork's right, it's outstanding. Like, it's pretty bipolar, but like, there are moments on tape where I'm like, that is some impressive foot speed, and just keeping his feet low to the ground, hitting shorter paced steps, but quickly. And, or I shouldn't say pace, shorter length steps, but really quick pace. So he's never losing his base, right? He's always grounded, which helps with balance, helps with when, you know, these edge rushers with 35 inch long arms are getting into you, you're still grounded and you can anchor. He just needs to get more consistent with that, better with his hand placement on the when he's playing offensive tackle. But at guard, you don't even have to worry about those, because I think he'll be fine in phone booth.
Yeah, and at this kind of a pick, right? You know, round two, pick 46, having that multiplicity and that flexibility is huge. That you have someone that you can flip in and out like that. And he still has some upside traits to it too, right? It's not just like, oh, we're just picking a guy just who's a total flyer. Like, this is a guy that could potentially like start for you if you absolutely need him to. So yeah, that's
excellent. But he's going to have to beat someone, but he can beat the guys I signed.
Yeah, he absolutely can. I'm back up. Round two, pick 54. I went with Will McDonald the fourth, Iowa State. 6'4", 245. Earlier this week, Matt Eberflus said he wants edge rushers who bend the corner, can get all of their parts pointed towards the quarterback, great athleticism get off, strength and will to fight back to the quarterback, and length. That describes Will McDonald more like to a T. He had 5 sacks, 6 quarterback hits, and 5 tackles for loss, and 24 tackles in 2022. He had double-digit sacks in 2020 and 2021. So he did fall off a little bit. But the production was there previously, and he's got all of the tools in order that you would think he can continue to do that in the NFL. As I said earlier, extremely long player who uses his leverage really well. I mean, you can see that in the picture that I have here. And again, if you want to see visuals, make sure you actually watch the lives, which usually are 5 p.m. on Thursdays if you're listening to the podcast version of this. But he plays with an incredibly high motor, uses the speed most often, but he can do a two-hand swipe, cross-chop to get to the edge. Doesn't quit on plays. I mean, he'll be the one that goes across the entire formation to tackle a running back. He'll be the one that's downfield and saves a touchdown as needed. He can add more mass for sure and strength as he is a bit weak at the point of attack. And I'd like to see a little more ability to change direction laterally as QB launch point changes. He gets tends to get stuck on a single lane for the most part. But and his run defense definitely needs to improve and increase his bag of pass rush moves. But I mean, he's got, again, like all of the pure raw athleticism and talent and the motor that you would need that would fit perfectly, I think, in that Eberflus hit system. He showed out at the Senior Bowl. I didn't get to watch that live, but you know, all the reports coming out of there was that he was able to show up.
So at the Senior Bowl, I was on a soapbox shouting at anyone that would listen, like old man shouting at clouds, that Will McDonald is the best player here. Like, flat out, I love this kid. I love everything about him. I just wish that he was a better fit for a 4-3. Because at 230, 235 pounds, it's just, I mean, he can be a situational edge rusher. And at this in this spot, at 54, I might be willing to take a situational edge rusher, right? Like a guy with his type of skill. But if he creeps up into the first round, it's, you know, Bears,
oh, yeah.
Bears don't stand a chance to take him. But speaking to what you said about some of his pass rush repertoire, I mean, I think the biggest secret to Will McDonald is that, in my opinion, his pass rush moves are better than what's on tape. He's hidden on tape. Like, you see him playing four technique, five technique in a three-man down D-line. That's not what he does. He's 235 pounds. And he's lining up eye to eye with an offensive tackle who weighs potentially 100 more pounds than him and asked to win. Like it doesn't make sense, but he still finds ways to win. And the reason I say I think his pass rush repertoire is better than what's on tape is because at the Senior Bowl, he showed it. He finally had the opportunity to rush from a six tech, a nine tech, and really bend that edge. And in one-on-ones, I mean, they're one-on-ones. It's stacked against the blockers, right? Because they don't have help, and blocking is all about how the unit performs together, not one man. But he was going up against Darnell Wright, who I think has the best hands among of any offensive lineman in this class. And the way that they were doing it was two reps in a row, same two guys. So the first rep, Will Anderson bends the edge, beats him around the top. Okay, beat him once. Can you do it again? So the next rep, he starts out looking like he's going to bend the edge again, then ducks back inside on inside move, which Wright was ready for, and he stopped, and then a lightning fast spin move back to the outside. He's on the quarterback like that. Like, I that's not stuff you learn overnight. I think his opportunity at Iowa State was very limited because of what he needed to do for his team, which is something I love, like thinking it through, like, this guy was asked to play in the pits and play against the run against 300 pounders, like on the interior, not on the edge, but on the interior, which is a nasty game to play. And he did it. And it might've hurt him, like as far as draft stock goes and all that, but he didn't care. He just wanted to play football. I love that about this guy.
And that's such a great point, because, I mean, doesn't that describe someone that an Eberflus would love? Like, in an interview at the Combine, if you got to talk to him, that you could see, you know, Will McDonald walks out of the room, Eberflus turns to Pauls and is like, how do we get this guy? And like you said, like, I couldn't justify taking him any higher. But at this place, with how bad the Bears pass rush was, just to be able to have a guy that you could develop and unleash on those third and longs a bit more, to me, it was worth it. And then potentially see, like, can he add a little more mass? Can he develop into someone that could be on the field for you a bit more?
Yeah. Now, the question I get with that is, and you very likely know way more about this than I do, but if he could add more mass, don't you think he would have at Iowa State playing in the trenches where he was?
So it's interesting, because you'd be really surprised in terms of what these players have at their disposal. I mean, we think about, you know, with these D1 football programs, obviously, like, some of them are literally, like, you know, the locker rooms you walk through and it's like, this is an NFL locker room that what you're using on a daily basis. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, the balance of being a student athlete still exists. I know there's definitely some who are don't do less student than athlete, but some of the, but it's, that's still a big balance you have to hit, the nutritional aspects. You know, some teams are very regimented in terms of what they have, and then other ones are just kind of like, hey, go what eat what you want in the mess hall kind of thing. And you know, these guys are going and grabbing like a bunch of Pop Tarts. You have also just the age thing, right? You know, a lot of these guys, 19, 20, 21 year olds, their bodies just still aren't maximally where they can get to just because of where they are physiologically. So when you combine all of that stuff together, you know, a good example in this, he's obviously an apparition, but like in terms of like how big he is, but like an Aaron Donald, I mean, like, yes, he's small when he came out for his position, but, and you look at him now, I mean, he is just a massive freak of nature at his stature and size that he has available to him. And that's because he was able to get in an NFL program that has the nutrition. He can focus pretty much only on his body, you know, full, and, you know, was able to fully mature. And as a side note to that, even the NFL struggles. Recently, there's that survey that went out from the NFL Players Association that talked and graded teams based on where things were, how good things were. The Bears specifically, they're two of their lowest areas. One of them was nutrition. And I remember I actually texted one of the guys and I was like, is this like really that bad? And one of them came back and was like, dude, it's just like desserts. Like if you want to go grab, like, have something healthy, you can, but they're not like making us. So if that's happening at the NFL level, like you can only imagine what's happening at the college level. Some guys are just set. I mean, this is a slight sidebar, but I don't, Bryce Young, he's not going to get too much bigger. He is what he is. His frame is for the most part what he is, but you know, there's other guys when you look at like at his Will McDonald's shoulder and frame, like I can see another 10 pounds can get out of there.
And so that actually brings up something that I thought about at the Senior Bowl that someone mentioned to me. It was like, it doesn't matter that they're full of water at the combine because everyone's full of water. All the numbers that we've seen for the last 20 years are guys full of water. So that's what the comparison is too, right? It's not, the comparison isn't to what their normal weight was coming out of college. It's to what their max weight was when they're as heavy as they can try to be.
Yeah, exactly. All these numbers are inflated, whether you talk about the measurables or you talk about the numbers. Because someone running a 4.44, because who ran that today? Nolan Smith ran a 4.44 today.
Did he? I didn't catch that.
Yeah, it's crazy speed. But I mean, he's not running a 4.44 on the field though, right? So you gotta always take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
All right, you're back up. Round two, pick 54.
I mean, really? This was Eberflus called me and said, you gotta get me my linebacker. Jack Campbell standing at 6'5" out of Iowa, 250 pounds. I mean, that's an Eberflus linebacker, I think.
Yeah.
He seems like one. And I mean, after I made this pick, I kind of realized, well, I have Okereke and Sanborn, so like he might not really play a lot right away, but maybe he pushes Sanborn. Maybe he, you know, finds a way to get on the field, or maybe he's just injury depth and a Sam backer. But I just think he's great value here. I think he's a rare frame for what we see in the NFL now. I mean, you go look at the testing numbers or the measurables for today. All these linebackers are 220 to 230 pounds. None of them are over really 6'2", maybe 6'3". Standing at 6'5", 250, Jack Campbell is the abnormality at this point. And I think he's an athlete. He's an instinctive player. And I think he's a guy who would fit right in this defense. I mean, really, one of the benefits of going to the defense the Bears are running right now is how unpopular it is in the NFL. Like how this type of scheme, even just for running a 4-3, you know, everyone shifted to a 3-4. And you can look at what Bill Belichick's done over the years. Every time it shifts one way, he switches to the other because it's easier to find rare and elite players to fit the defense when the rest of the NFL doesn't want them. I think that's what Jack Campbell is.
I think that's a really valid point. And to get a guy like this now, let him chill. And like, you see what happens with an Okereke. You see what happens with the Sanborn. Like, I'm excited what Sanborn's doing. And, you know, Poles mentioned this yesterday, the day before, how he plays faster than he tests, which is great. But at the end of the day, I think there is a ceiling on what Jack Sanborn can be. And can he be an heir apparent, right? Can he be the one that steps up when in a year or two you decide, you know what, We appreciate what you're doing for us, or Jack, but you know, Sanborn, but we can't, you know, we need a little more. And so I like this pick. I'm back up, round two, pick 61. Admittedly, this might be my least favorite pick I've made in all three mocks. So I'm just going to put that out there now. But I went with DeJuan Jones, tackle out of Ohio State. He's 6'8", 360 pounds. Remember that, because that's going to come up in a second again here. Played football and basketball in high school. Size and length make him a mountain to get through.
He had D1 offers in basketball.
Oh, which is insane, right? That's wild. He uses his length to set the edge well, and he's an absolute mauler in the run game. I mean, like, just swallows you whole and will bury you. Perfect block temperament, where he's got aggression, tenacity, but he doesn't overset. He's not overly aggressive to leave the open lanes, and shows some pretty functional strength you need to hold off defenders. Kind of going back to our previous conversation about strength, there are some guys in this draft, some linemen, where you're saying, have you been in the weight room? Like, they just can't hold their blocks, and this is not a problem for him. Pretty surprising movement skill for his size. Needs to work on his hip and knee bend. I mean, you're 6'8". It's hard to bend the hip and the knee when you're that big. And needs to work on redirecting his own weight. It's physics. There's a lot of mass to move. You really have to make sure you're on top of that. And he's pretty much only played right tackle, so you don't have a lot of versatility there. But, you know, in theory, maybe if you're going to pick a tackle position right now that's the most open, it would be right tackle. Obviously, Braxton Jones has been talked about highly. Speaking of Braxton Jones, 6'5", 310 pounds. Zach Thomas, 6'5", 308 pounds. Carter, he's 6'3", 311. Doug Kramer, 6'2", 299. Riley Reiff, 6'3", 313. Alex Leatherwood, everyone's favorite lineman they wanted to play forever, 6'5", 312. DeJuan Jones doesn't fit the Poles profile. Poles even went as far as saying when he first got here, we're going to change it up a little bit in terms of style. So a lot of these guys, and the message has been pretty clear, we've got to change body types a little bit. We've got to get lighter. We've got to get quicker. That's why I'm not super happy with the pick I made here. It was one of those things where I'm sitting, I felt I really need a tackle. I saw a guy that's just really good and valuable, and I went with it. But afterwards, I was like, I probably should have gone a different route. But you know what? I already submitted the trade card, so I can't go back now.
Juan Castillo is somewhere right now shouting about how DeJuan Jones needs to be picked number one overall. Like, this is his kind of guy. And I love DeJuan Jones. And I think I've had a lot of conversations with Robert Schmitz about this, of like, the math's just different when your arms are as long as his are. He has like a 7'4", 7'6" wingspan. And it's not one of those wingspans where it's all chest. His arms are just freakishly long. And that changes the math on every angle, on everything. When you're as strong in your upper body as he is, like, you see him throwing guys out to the ground with one hand. Like, he is just an absolute monster. So if you're sitting here saying Bears are going all in on Justin Fields as a passer, we need to protect him, I think DeJuan Jones is an outstanding pick. If you're going to ask him to be the point man on your right side for your wide zone running scheme, that changes it a little. But as far as a pass protector goes, he's just different because of that length that he provides. And you can look at, like, I think Orlando Brown Jr. is probably the best example of this. He's runs a West Coast offense that's based on on outside zone running concepts, right? He does well enough in the run game to get by, but where he makes his money is protecting Pat Mahomes with that ridiculous length he has. He's slow. He can't recover, but you know what that length plays.
And that was my only hope going back when, you know, I'm back in the draft room and I'm sitting there and I'm, you know, Luke Getsy's looking at me like, why did you do that? And I'm like, because he's going to protect Justin. That's what I'm ultimately going to get back to. All right, you are back up. Round three, pick 64. Another man in red.
Yeah. Zach Harrison, edge rusher out of Ohio State. I don't think he Well, at 64, he might be there. I think he's probably going mid to late second round, but this 64 is right on the edge of that. I think he's just an outstanding football player. Like, there are questions about his motor. He was one of the top recruits in the country coming out of high school. 6'6", good length, or 6'5", maybe, something around there. Good length, explosive straight line athlete. Not really going to do a ton laterally. I mean, he can do enough to get by, but he's, as far as lateral mover goes, he's not the most impressive guy. But you're asking him to play 4-3 base end, hold up against the run, which he's, again, good enough at. He has enough power to do that, but he's not going to dominate there either. But where I really fall in love with this guy's tape is in the fourth quarter. I think he has a lot of, for most of the game, he has a lot of contain responsibilities. I think it's either, some people say that his motor's questionable, and I'm not sure it's the case, and I could very well be wrong there, but I think it's more that he has a lot of contain responsibilities, a lot of checks to take care of before he's free to go rush the passer. So he looks more passive while doing it. But in the fourth quarter, he was Ohio State's closer. When he was told, just go get the quarterback, that's all we want you to do, he did it. He finished games. He forced turnovers. He even forced touchdowns on defense. Like, there were moments on his tape where you're just going, this guy's ridiculous late in the game.
Unfortunately, today he didn't test. A hamstring issue held him back. He should be good to go for the pro day. At least that's what the reports were. And there's plenty of time for that, too, between here now and Ohio State's pro day. So that'll heal up totally fine. But yeah, just a guy that has his speed off the edge, a guy that has as much responsibility as he was given on that defense and what he was able to create. I mean, that's quintessential what you want from a guy at, again, round three, pick 64.
Yeah. And I have a few more notes on him that just dawned on me that I wrote down months ago, but psychology major, team captain. So, like, not a throwaway major just to get through college. Like, psychology major is actually pretty difficult. Team captain, love to see that. He's recognized at Ohio State for an academic achievement. I don't think it was all Big Ten academic, but there was some academic, like, honor roll that he was a part of. And in high school, he was named the All-American Bowl Man of the Year for excellence in community service and athletic distinction. Like, there's a lot about this guy that screams to me, it's not a motor issue.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree more with that. There's other stuff going on there. I'm back up, round three, pick 64. And I went pretty much as far on the other side of the spectrum of type of player between these two picks. Nathaniel Dell, wide receiver out of Houston. 5'10", 163 pounds. And I think that's if he's soaking wet and, you know, has a couple extra coins in his pants. But when you talk about production, Dell is the definition of production. He led the nation over the past 2 years with over 2,700 yards and 29 touchdowns. In 2022, he had 109 of those receptions for 1,398 yards and 17 touchdowns. Goes by Tank, which, I mean, scouting report should just end there at that point. But showed out at the Senior Bowl. Great
nickname for his size.
I know, right? I love it so much. Oh, no, going too far. I love it so much. Showed out at the Senior Bowl. I'm sure you're going to be able to speak to that. But was able to get open over and over again. Made some pretty awesome contested catches. Accelerates just so quickly. Made a great straight line speed. Adjusts well to off-target throws. Routes are precise with ability to stop and cut on a dime. Really active feet and keeps his eyes up to dodge traffic easily, and which lets him get a lot of yards after the catch. Will also be able to operate as a return man, which Bears definitely need. That they're all over the place. Biggest issue is size. As I said, he can run across the middle, but can he take a hit from a waiting linebacker multiple times a game? Short arms create a smaller pass radius, and he'll be coming into the NFL from a pretty wide open offense in which Dell ran a relatively limited route tree. And he'll fight on the outside, but the size ultimately prevents him from winning contested catches against, you know, those middle to larger cornerbacks. But again, if you're looking for production, you're looking for someone that's going to get open and that could be a safety blanket underneath and across the middle, Tank Dell is your guy.
So I can't speak too much on the Senior Bowl with him just because I was – very focused on the trenches the whole time I was there. I know that he was dominating one-on-ones the little bit that I did see of him. But again, one-on-ones are built for the offense to win. The corner can't exactly press him too hard without just getting destroyed at least one rep because he doesn't have any help. So I have concerns about his size. I think everyone does, but if it's just it's a third round pick at this point, you're trying to make an upside bet. I can respect it.
Yeah. And really couldn't be any different than the last year's third round pick where you're going for just speed and a bigger receiver and gadgety to a guy who, I mean, he just straight up plays receiver well. It's just, he does it tinily. I just made up that word, yeah. But it fits. Round three, pick 79.
This is more a Senior Bowl pick and a trust fall to Robert Schmidt's opinion, because I spent the week on the trenches. He spent the week on receivers and defensive backs, and he came away raving about Michael Wilson and about the ability that this guy showed all week, and that injuries must have really just been the reason why he hasn't produced like he should, because he looks like a dude out on the field at the Senior Bowl. He looked like a dude out on the field, and it's just really me trusting his opinion, because like I said at the start of the show, I am woefully underprepared on receivers and defensive backs.
When you get to these later picks too, I mean, you try to do as much homework as you can on them, but like, you're going to start saying people, like when I was looking at your list, I'm like, I have no idea who this is. Seems like a great dude. I'm sure like, you know, has a great family life, but you know what? I know nothing about you from a football perspective. And at some point, it's still just so early in the process. I mean, we said that multiple times in this. Yeah. So now we get to a cool part of the show where I get to announce that Windy City Gridiron and Bare Bones are going to present Draft on Draft. We're going to be doing a live draft party from Noon Whistle Brewing Company. It is in Lombard, Illinois. I'm really excited about this. It'll be an opportunity for, I know myself and at least Danny are going. Maybe a couple other individuals from Windy City Gridiron are going to be able to pop out there and be a part of this. We're going to react live. Robert Schmitz is going to be handling most of the host duties offsite, going to bring us in at times. We're hoping to have some of the fans, some of the listeners who are there, who come to this, maybe pop on, give some perspective on, you know, picks that are made. Maybe the Bears will make two picks in the first round. Who knows, like, depending on how some certain trades go. And also, we want to do some giveaways. I know there's a couple of things that I specifically are for sure going to be happening, and a couple of maybes that I'm working on right now. So you only get those giveaways, though, if you come. If you are there and, you know, and you're hanging out with us, we're going to get there, as you can see here on the screen. If you're listening, it's going to be that Thursday, the first night of the draft, 6 p.m. The draft starts at 7. So we want to meet you guys. We want to talk. We want to see your perspective on what's going to be happening coming up. And then, like I said, you know, we're going to give away some stuff away and try to get you all involved as much as possible. So as we get more details, we'll get that out to you. But yeah, Noon Whistle Brewing Company, Lombard, Illinois, Draft on Draft.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, if only you were here, you can come too.
Yeah, if I didn't live in Texas, I'd be there right away.
I am back up with one of my favorite players, one of my favorite football players, and that is Travius Hodges Tomlinson, cornerback out of TCU, 5'8", 175, nephew of LaDainian Tomlinson. In 2023, he mainly played outside. You know, I'm going to get to this in a little bit, but due to his size, he might be a little bit more of a nickel or moving inside. But yeah, he had 47 tackles, 3 assists, 7 pass breakups, 3 interceptions, including 2 pick sixes in 2022. And he had a quarterback rating of 38.9 when he was targeted. Very experienced with over 2,500 snaps at TCU. He played outside. He played slot. He played in the box. Pretty solid tackler who confidently wraps up despite his size limitations. High-level anticipation skills with the ability to explode downhill. Super explosive player. I mean, it's been documented that he has 42-inch vertical jump, broad jump 10'8", 4.3 40, also back squatted 6.05. I expect a lot of those numbers to be reproduced here when the combine kicks off for cornerbacks. high football IQ that can really help in zone, flips his hips well, runs with top-end speed wide receivers, but he is small. Two picks in a row where apparently I'm just leaning on the small guy, but wasn't invited to the Senior Bowl likely because of this. What has shorter arms as well, which reduces his pass breakup radius, but due to his explosion and his ability to close, he's able to hide this radius issue. Can get a little grabby in coverage sometimes, and he can he ultimately make the tackle against the tight ends, running backs when he needs to step up and do so. Even though he is a willing tackler, he did have too many missed tackles, unfortunately. But he can contribute immediately. I mean, as someone that maybe you do get in round four because teams are overlooking him because of his size, he's someone that can beat out your starter, depending on who that is. And just because of he is a football player, and I love him, and I just respect the hell out of him, and I think he's going to be productive if someone takes a chance on him.
I love an NFL bloodline pick. Absolutely. God knows what it takes to be there, to stay there, and he's probably seen it firsthand. I do wonder, and this is pure speculation. I know I'm not great with defensive back play. It's just pretty foreign to me, growing up more around offensive line. But I wonder how short arms, like, I almost feel like in the nickel, you can live with short arms for coverage because everything is such close quarters early on. And a lot of it is really just sticking with your guy more than like having to recover deep. But as a run defender, which I think the Bears care a lot about out of their nickel because they take that linebacker off the field for it and, you know, run a lighter front. I wonder how much they care about shorter arms because of the ability to shed blocks.
That's a really good point. I was hesitant to pick him, but I knew I wanted to, and I pushed this off three mocks because of his size. But again, I just love him, so I needed to get him on here. And
looking at what the Bears in fourth round, sign me up.
And looking at a guy like what the Bears have, right? Assuming Jalen Johnson gets an extension, which I expect him to at this point. Assuming, you know, you have Gordon, and I want him to be on the slot. I think he just kind of played better there when I saw him last year. But so I wanted an outside corner, but like it just didn't happen and it didn't fall that way. And so, you know, can I live with maybe having Gordon on the outside and having Tomlinson here on the inside? I think so. But like you said,
I haven't dove into the numbers on Gordon, but I thought that he kind of hit a hot streak when he stopped playing nickel. But that was my thought, at least.
I agree.
I can't back it up.
No, I agree with that. I think it was my leaning towards was that they let him focus on a position versus it specifically being outside versus nickel. But that can be entirely true. I mean, I just thought like in the glimpses when I saw him doing both that I saw better play out of that nickel position. But yeah, he definitely was more solid when they stopped messing around with it. So if they see him ultimately as outside, then my pick is perfect and I don't need to change it. Round four, pick 103.
Carl Brooks out of Bowling Green. A very interesting player. He did not get a combine invite, which is a huge bummer because probably one of the freakier athletes you'll see. I think he's like 6'4", or maybe 6'5", but he's 300 pounds, like a real 300 pounds and extremely explosive, extremely impressive lateral mover for being 300 pounds. I mean, he played edge at Bowling Green. He wasn't an interior D lineman. He played a little bit on the interior, but really his success came at edge. So this is just an upside pick. And I'm not sure, like I probably need to move him to three tech within this. And I think being behind Jalen Carter and Zach Allen is a good thing for him to help him just be a rotational guy, because the game that I watched him playing inside against Mississippi State. So I tried to watch a game where he was up against higher level competition than what Bowling Green typically plays in the MAC. The explosion wasn't the same. It was almost like he needed that speed to power to win. It felt like when he was on the edge, he needed those carry steps into the block. And he just, it was very unfamiliar to him to win early with his hands and with his explosiveness. So I think there's a lot to learn here for him to play inside. But in the fourth round, with his athletic traits and as a backup who I'm not counting on initially right away, I think the upside's enough to say I'll take him at 103. That's a easy one for me.
We saw how a team in the Eagles, when you have that many pieces that you can just rotate on the defensive line and not just at the edge, but also, you know, within the trenches, is so important, and you can build on that, especially a team and a defense like what Eberflus wants to use here. And so I like this. I love this. Get as many potential upside pieces as you can here. Again, take the Eagles. Jordan Davis was a rotational player, and we know how explosive he can be and where he was picked. But that was just because of how much talent and how much depth the Eagles had. So the Bears need to start cultivating that, and this is how you do it.
Yeah, that's it. The Eagles were exactly kind of what I had in mind putting this together, was trying, like, Milton Williams, I think, is a great comparison here. Super explosive athlete. It was like 290, I think, coming out. And he hasn't blown up into an incredible player, but he's a quality piece in their D-line rotation who can – doesn't have to be more than that. If he grows into it, great. He doesn't have the pressure on him to be it right away. But if he's not, he's still better than most backups, and you can rotate him in when you need to.
Absolutely. Oh, you're up again. Round four, pick 107.
Now, this one I'm a lot more excited about after today, because I liked Zach Pickens a lot already. But he put on a show today at the combine. Top five prospect recruit coming out of high school. South Carolina was very, very excited to get him committed. But the role that he was asked to play there doesn't really fit his skill set. Like, so he's been considered a disappointment to some Gamecock fans. But really, I think that he was asked to play more of a gap control style of football, or role, I guess I would say. And when you got a guy 300 pounds this explosive, you want him to be penetrating upfield. And that's not what he was really asked to do there. He was asked to hold ground in gaps, which in the SEC probably makes some sense. But in the NFL, I think he is an outstanding fit for what the Bears want out of a three tech. And again, it just builds this rotation, this D-line rotation, into a deep monster of a unit, to have four guys now between Jalen Carter, Zach Pickens, Carl Brooks, and Zach Allen, who can just keep each other fresh.
Yeah, he's a guy that always was just showing up in my mocks, didn't know a lot about him, did a little research on him, and then I saw him run today, and already in my brain I was like, okay, so maybe in my next one I'm gonna be getting Zach Pickens in here, because like he moved just really, really well. And just can be, I think, a part of a very dominant defensive line as a developmental and as a rotational piece.
Yeah, he is a awesome athlete, like so flexible, so smooth, like, and explosive at the same time. There's just a lot to like with him.
Round four, pick 134. I finally go get a running back. Similar to how Q did it, I definitely try to mentally think about where I might be free agency wise. In my brain, I signed Saquon Barkley. I have Herbert, and then I went and got a power back that can spell and do some of the dirty work. Running back out of UAB, 5'11", 215 pounds. This is my first HBCU prospect I took in a mock, and I should have had one sooner, and it won't be my last. Played 11 games in 2022, rushed for 1,366 yards on 204 carries for 6.7 yards per carry, 13 touchdowns, and 4 fumbles. Those fumbles are going to come back up in a second. In the passing game, though, he just had 3 receptions for 19 yards, so leaves a lot to be desired as a pass catcher. Power, instincts, and balance is pretty much the calling cards for McBride. Runs with patience and presses the line of scrimmage, lets the block develop. Top-end vision allows him to find gaps and cutback lanes. Good burst in short areas, rarely goes down via the first tackle. And a pretty violent runner. He may end up on a handful of angry runs as on YouTube clips and things of that nature. He is not the fastest back and does not have breakaway speed. He's not going to be a home run hitter, struggles with some of the lateral agility and ability to accelerate quickly. And as mentioned before, he really doesn't add much as a receiving threat out of the backfield. And as I said before, fumbles have been an issue. You know, he's had 11 in the last two seasons, four in 2022. I look at him as kind of a power back, Tyler Allgeier, change of pace. You have, so in my scenario, I have Saquon Barkley, who is your explosive back. You have Herbert, who's got explosion. And then you have the power with a Dwayne McBride. Is he going to be your long-term answer if, you know, if and when potentially you move on from a Saquon Barkley down the road, or the case may be? No. But, you know, we're in the fourth round here. We just need, we need players that fill certain roles, and he's going to fill his well.
Yeah, I like it. I don't know much about McBride, but it makes sense to me. My main question would be, does he play special teams too? Which I imagine a power back probably has some experience on special teams, though.
That's the thing. I don't know. But just with how he, yeah, with being more of a power back and how he doesn't shy away from contact, all that, like, I can't see why he wouldn't be able to play special teams. And at this point, he has to be more helpful on special teams than Treston Ebner. Yeah. He's done nothing.
Yeah. Well, I think I remember Benny Cunningham. He was always on kick return units as just a blocker. And mm-hmm. I feel like the third string running back gets overlooked as you know, really you want a four core special teamer there.
Oh yeah, 100%. Because you're not going to be getting a bulk of the carries. Again, in this fake scenario I made, I mean, if you're handing the ball off, it's going to Saquon Barkley. If you're not handing it to Saquon, mm-hmm. it's going to Khalil Herbert. So maybe yeah. McBride gets 1-2 carries. You better be able to do special teams. Round four. Pick 134 on your side.
Now, I wish that I had thought of that special teams question while I was doing my draft so I could have an answer on Kendre Miller, but I don't. Explosive runner, twitchy, quick. I mean, that's about the extent of what I know about him. He's one of maybe two or three running backs that I kept coming up around this pick and kept saying, like, yeah, I wanted to add more of a gadgety runner, I guess. I don't know if that's the best way to put it, but like if you have Tony Pollard in mind, you could replace that with Saquon Barkley too. Either one would be fine and around a similar price range, I think. But see, so you have your basically you have your lead back, right? And then you have Khalil Herbert, who's more like a one cut and gone kind of back. He's not going to like constantly be juking you out of your pants, but it's like he hits the hole and he's gone. It's that simple with him. So I wanted to get a guy who could be more of a pass catcher, pass protector for insurance for my lead back and Pollard if he gets hurt, because I really think Herbert, what he does in the passing game can really limit your offense at times. So yeah. I didn't want to be limited by that if the lead back gets hurt. So I wanted to get a guy who could catch the ball, make some moves, and really just help his quarterback. And that's why I targeted Kendre Miller. Now, if you're going to sit there and tell me that's not what Kendre Miller does, I'll probably believe you, but that's what I thought he did.
That's what I was led to believe he did.
Yeah.
Round five, pick 137. I took a linebacker out of Tulane, Dorian Williams, 6'1", 228 pounds. I didn't know his game was as strong as it is. I actually, when I started really diving in, I loved Dorian Williams now. 13 games and logged 772 snaps, 85 tackles, 31 assists in 2022. In coverage, he had 3 pass breakups, 2 interceptions. As a pass rusher, 22 pressures, 9 quarterback hurries, 7 QB hits, and 6 sacks. Bears need this considering their leading sack was a safety. Not good. And his production is key here. I mean, he just produces. He's all over the place. He has the size and frame to be an every down linebacker. Great length, can close distances when searching to cut off routes and flow outside the tackles, but sometimes he can take some poor angles, but I think that can be coached up. High motor player who can find cracks in blocking, reliable tackler across his 700 reps, can contribute on special teams. That one I do know. He did the special teams over at Tulane. A little slow on his read and react, and not exactly the most instinctive back, but I think that can be coached up as well. So again, this is going to be your third, your fourth linebacker who's mainly going to help on special teams, but has a little bit of upside so that if somebody gets hurt, if he needs to step in, you got Jack Sanborn being your instinctive, just always knows where to be at the right time. And then you have Dorian Williams, who is just a tackle machine, who in theory, with this revamped, hopefully defensive line, can actually get in there and clean up what they leave behind.
Green Wave's been good to the Bears historically, so I'm all for picking some Green Wave guys late in the draft.
Just got to get that Green Wave pipeline, right? Round 5, pick 150, cues up.
Alex Forsyth, center out of Oregon. I am a lot higher on this guy than a lot of what I've seen out there. And it's probably because he's going to be 25 years old as a rookie. But in the fifth round, I don't care about that. You know, I mean, I just want to get a really good football player. And that's where I think he is. Yeah. And I mentioned earlier having maybe I pick a center and he battles with Lucas Patrick for the spot. The reason I didn't sign a center, because I really like some of the guys in this class who are going to be available in the fourth, fifth round, supposedly. But there's so many centers in this class that I really think it's a strong class at the position that you're going to be able to get a guy who can either sit behind Patrick or overtake him. Because I think the Bears have, you know, they told Lucas Patrick he's their starting center when they signed him. Last year was kind of a crapshoot. I think they're going to give him another chance. That doesn't mean you don't bring in competition in the draft when it's a deep class. And if the kid beats him out, the kid beats him out. Like, I think it's that simple. I think you can sit there with a straight face and tell a player you signed and told he's a starter somewhere, the kid beat you out. And so Forsyth, the thing that really sells me on him, turn on his tape against Georgia from week one. It's as simple as that. He performed well against that disgusting Georgia front. He won most of his reps in that game. The rest of the team didn't, but he did. He looked very good, just all around. There were really no holes in his game that I could find outside of him being 25. I mean, in that game, at least I should say there were no holes I could find. Probably not the most mobile guy, but he's mobile enough to fit the scheme. Solid pass protection, just brings some really good power to his reps and is a tone setter at center. I mean, he is not afraid to get down and dirty with the guy with his opponents in the trenches, and he's confident that he's going to win.
If you're able to not just hold your own, but do well against that Georgia front, which is just absolutely insane, you deserve your flowers. And something else I think Bears fans need to keep in mind when it comes to like a Lucas Patrick, right? You know, we aren't in the room. We didn't, you know, we don't know the guy. We didn't shake his hand kind of thing. And these coaches, these GMs, these players are more attached to each other than we give credit to. And they know what's going on behind the scenes, right? They may say, hey, Lucas just got a bad rap, a couple of those injuries. I mean, but he is a center. He's a solid guy. And a solid player. And that's what they truly believe. And that's going to shape their offseason and what they're going to do moving forward. Do we potentially as a Bears fans be like, oh, Lucas Patrick sucks, and then we had to deal with Sam Mustipher and we need a center and we need to draft him in the second round? I'm like, yeah, that makes sense coming from our end, but that just may not be how this team's operating. So yeah. You still need to bring in competition, as Q said, and having a guy that's as solid as Alex Forsyth seems to be is a solid choice.
Yeah. I think I'm on the Patrick front. Like, he was signed to be a guy who might be a little undersized, but could set a tone and know the offense for you at the center position. He was not signed to be a guy who could cover for an undersized center next to him while playing guard. I think that's an important distinction.
Yeah, that's a very good point to bring up. Round 5, pick 150. I went back in the trenches and I went with Juice Scruggs, also center out of Penn State. 6'3", 308 pounds. He's played a little while. 2021, he had 926 snaps. In 2022, 836. We saw some improvement from 21 to 22. In 2022, he allowed 10 quarterback hurries, 3 quarterback hits, and 1 sack while playing at center. Gets off the snap quickly and generates movement at the point of attack. Pretty consistently finishes his blocks. He doesn't have the highest ceiling, but he could be a quality starter for years in a man or a zone scheme. Uses his hands well and shows good coordination between upper and lower halves, and does need to add some strength to generate more push against NFL defensive linemen. Again, solid but not elite in anything. The combine, how he moves, I think is going to be really big for him to climb up some draft boards. He's just going to be a guy that you can just plug in and be pretty happy with, I think. I mean, again, he's not going to reset the center market. He's not going to be a top 5 center, but he's going to, I think he'd be a top 20 center if you need him to be. He could be a top 15 center if you need him to be. Well, just kind of depends on how his development goes.
Yeah, I he's actually a guy who I have not watched yet, but is on my list to watch. He's got an all-time great name, though.
Oh, I mean, that's Juice Scruggs. The reason I drafted him was the name.
Yeah, Juice Scruggs is who I want snapping a football. Like, that's a great name. I'm curious what Hess Strong is. You can see on his tattoo on his arm right there, it says Hess Strong. And I just looked up a picture to make sure that's what it says, but I'm curious what that means.
A little research for an article for you. Look at that.
Yeah, there you go. I gotta learn. Gotta figure it out.
Round 6, we're winding down here. Pick 187.
So Will Mallory, tight end out of Miami, Florida. I just think this guy's a good football player. I don't think he has any dominant trait. I think that he's pretty quick in and out of his route breaks, like quicker than you expect him to be. And when I turn on the tape, I see a guy who is asked to do more as a blocker in this offense than anyone who I've really watched that produces at the level that he does as a receiver. So there's a lot that I really like about his game. I need to find more good tape on him because I've had a hard time finding it. And I know that a lot of analysts aren't as big on him as I am, but I haven't found a reason not to be yet. I think I heard that some Miami fans have been disappointed in his production as well, but everything I've seen just points to a guy who's a really good football player, who's asked to do a lot within that offense, and guy who's consistently doing his job and has some athletic upside.
Cole Kmet is getting an extension. Right. And it's tough to do you justify in today's NFL extending a Cole Kmet and then using a high draft pick going out and signing an individual like, why am I blanking on his name right now? Who's a tight end out of Miami? Who's a free agent? Oh,
Gesicki.
Thank you, Gesicki. You're not doing that. So you need to make decisions that are on the you know, I'll say bottom edge. It's dissing Will Mallory like that, but you need a round 6 pick with some potential upside. That's where you need to make some hay at tight end. You sign another guy that you know is going to be a blocking tight end that's solid, and you see how they develop.
And this is also similar to, like I said, with center and offensive line in general. It's a very deep tight end class. There is a lot of guys to like, which means that there's a lot that's going to get overlooked. And I think you're going to be able to find, like, someone in this draft will find a diamond in the rough at tight end.
And it happens a lot of years, right? I mean, yeah, it's the obvious one, but look at a George Kittle. I mean, he slipped through the cracks for some reason, and he is now George Kittle. You look at Travis Kelce. He has off-the-field stuff, but those guys happen a lot and frequently, more than you think. My final pick, round 7, pick 220. I just stayed on the offensive line. I want more development here. I want a situation where, you know, your tackle goes down and you have someone else that you can bring in. We saw that a lot with the Bears this last year. And actually in previous years before that, it's been a rotating cast of guys. So I want to take multiple swings. Trevor Reed, tackle, Louisville, 6'5", 307 pounds. This tackle fits the Ryan Poles mold a little bit more. 2022, played 590 snaps across 11 games. He allowed 8 quarterback hurries, 2 QB hits, and 3 sacks. He's got really good foot quickness and length for his size, actually. He consistently gets up to second-level defenders. Louisville has good athleticism for his size, which allowed Louisville to use him on screens as the lead blocker, often beats defenders to the spot in his pass sets. He's only a one-year starter and looks best to be in a zone blocking scheme, needs to improve his upper body strength. He tends to cover up defenders instead of sustaining blocks and burying guys. And if he can improve that upper body strength, that should help with that. More of a waist bender with some feet that need a little, gets a little tied up. And he too often ends up reaching and lunging when going against some quicker defenders. That lack of body strength does appear in his pass protection too. Reed can use his athleticism to beat defenders to a spot. He hasn't really shown consistently the strength in his hands to sustain blocks and anchor on defenders. But, you know, just for a guy that just has some of the quickness and athleticism he has, I'll take a little bit of that gamble upside to see if we can clean up some of that technique, get him in the weight room, and lock down that tackle spot.
Yeah, I haven't watched Trevor Reed yet either, but looks like he's got some solid length based on this picture, which is something that I think Ryan Poles definitely values.
That's what it is. Traits. Round 7, pick 220, your final pick of the draft.
Yeah, I might be going too much on D-line at this point, but, I mean, 7th round pick, guy might just be stuck on the practice squad till someone gets hurt. But I think Nesta Jade Silvera is a guy who's going to make an NFL roster. And, I mean, if I'm sitting here in round 7 and saying he's still on the board, I'm going to take him. I think he's an easy pick here. He had a really impressive Senior Bowl. He's an interesting prospect. He's a little more squatty in his stature than you see with a lot of these defensive tackles. And he's like 6'1", about a little over 300 pounds, like 310 maybe. But he's got some impressive quickness, and he wasn't a full-time player at Arizona State. He was actually a transfer from, I believe, Miami, Florida, where he started his college career. But when he came in on the Arizona State defense, I felt like their defense just got better. As simple as that. An interior rusher. I mean,
this is one of those guys.
What was that?
No, I was just, you cut off for a second, so I thought you were done talking. Go ahead. Keep going.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry about that. I'm not sure if you could really put him into being a nose tackle versus a 3-tech. I think he's just somewhere in between, and you live with that, you know, which probably means he's playing nose, but can, when the offense brings motion across the line of scrimmage, he becomes a 3-tech. It's as, you know, when offense is motion, it changes what the defense has aligned. That's football. But I think he's just a solid athlete and great value in the 7th round.
This was another nominee for definitely like an all-name team. I love the name. And I had no idea who he was. And then I was watching the combine, and D-line was doing their drills. And I was like, you drafted that guy. All right, cool. I'm going to pay attention. And they were doing I forgot the official name of it, but, you know, one of the ball in a pole drills where they're going around the edge, slapping the bags, yeah, almost decapitating the bag holders and, you know, trying and finishing through. And dear Lord, he was like bending that bag in half. I think he concussed one of the guys holding the bags just with the power he had. So, you know, that was for a round 7 guy who, like you said, probably mainly on practice squad, but that just has that kind of a raw power that can be a part of that rotation if someone goes down. Yeah, go for it. So these are the drafts that we had. I'll read through them real quick for those in the podcast who are listening, since you cannot see this. But we got Quentin Johnson, Matt Mazzie Smith, Will McDonald, DeJuan Jones, Nathaniel Dell, Travis Hodges Tomlinson, Dwayne McBride, off my screen, Dorian Williams, Juice Scruggs, Trevor Reed. Quentin ended up with 2 trade downs, which again was illegal, but we're allowing it. It's fine for this
draft. Broke the rules.
He traded with the Colts and the Patriots later, but he got Jalen Carter, Matthew Bergeron, Jack Campbell, Zach Harrison, Michael Wilson, Carl Brooks, Zach Pickens, Kendre Miller, Alex Forsythe, Will Mallory, Nesta Jade Silvera. Overall, 2 pretty solid drafts. I think covers the bases. PFF likes my draft a little bit more, but I mean,
I think I did the impossible because I think this was the only draft I didn't get an A+ after trading number 1 overall. Mostly because I took Zach Harrison too early and Michael Wilson too early, where I think they're actually going to go. So I think that's kind of I was trying to use my board more than their board.
And I think that's the way to go. I mean, are there, look at last year, like Tyquan Thornton, right? When he did, Zach Tom went when he did. I mean, all these guys are going, there's multiple guys that are going to go where a PFF board or a PFN board or whoever, like, that's way too early. Why are you doing it? Teams fall in love with guys. Teams hate other guys. Things pop up in the process. So to go off of only this is silly. But one thing I did also want to highlight, you were talking about, you have this amazing, and you, the stuff you put out, by the way, on Twitter, and if you're not following Q, you absolutely have to. It's one of those things where half of the data he puts out hurts my brain, but then if I sit there long enough, I can parse through it. But it's, there's so much beautiful in-depth stuff. Like one of the things you posted today that I retweeted, which one was that with? Oh yeah, it was like how the sack rates and how they correlated with some of the numbers that were being put out in the combine, and how that was pretty predictable actually. Like, and it was awesome. So like, you know, for everyone that calls this the underwear Olympics, like there's validity to that. So he's got amazing stuff. You have to follow him. One of the things he has is this Excel off season where you can go through, make cuts, make trades, go through free agency, all that jazz. And this is what his turned out to be. So let me just talk about this a little bit, because I think this is amazing. And I love that this exists.
Yeah. Thanks for pushing it. I built this thing when I was trying to get an idea last off season for myself of like, what could the Bears do, and like trying to think through the possibilities of like what they could do, because they seem so handcuffed. And as I was building, I was like, you know, it'd be pretty easy to just throw this together and put it out there. So I did it. And because I had already done all the legwork to make it for myself, and I was like, well, sure, I'll just put it out there, see what happens. This thing wouldn't be possible without the work of PFF Brad and his contract projections that he puts out there, because I get the first year AAV or the first year cap hits of the most important free agents in this. I calculate them straight from what Brad puts out. So Brad puts out great work, and I love the fact that his work exists so I can use it in other ways. It's just drop down boxes and VLOOKUPs and a bunch of database stuff in an Excel sheet. It's great.
It looks like it's rough at first in terms of like, oh my God, there's a lot to do here. But for one, that's nice because that's what the Bears have to do. I definitely, when I ran through this, wanted to make sure I tried to do it as similar to how they would. So, you know, I went through the order really, you do free agency first, obviously. But like, I know a couple people are like, oh wait, shoot. I messed up. I should have cut someone earlier. I'm going to cut them now, so I have money. It's like, you know, do this trade. I was like, you can't do that. Keep it clean. Try to be channel your inner Ryan Poles, right? Don't go back.
That was part of my thought process when I put it out at first last year, to like help people realize how difficult this is.
Yeah.
Like, you make cuts, then you sign free agents, then you have the draft. If you draft first, it's really easy. Like, you don't.
I think we talked about that a little earlier, like last week too, like how different would the landscape of the NFL be if the draft was first? There'd be a lot of veterans that didn't get jobs, and then there might be some other veterans that don't sign at certain places because they know they're not going to have a job because they drafted a rookie. Like, it would just be an entirely different league.
Yeah, it would change everything. Like, if you could make your free agent signings already knowing what you got out of the number one pick, that completely changes the structure of your roster.
So if you haven't yet, absolutely go do this. My only critique of what I'm seeing here from what Q did is you still have Trevor Siemian as your backup. Get him out of there. I need a different backup quarterback. Other than that, though, I'm fine.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. At the end of the day, it's just going to cost me more money to get rid of him. And it's like, I just have a hard time saying it because he's probably better than a lot of backups that are out there. So
you're not wrong in all reality. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're depending on your backup quarterback to win you more than like a game or two, your season's already in some dire straits. So it's whatever.
Yeah.
But that's all we got for tonight. Thank you so much for coming on, making this a really fun episode. I thought it was like a really awesome talk, and the fact that we had such different mocks too, we really got to go through a lot of guys, and I'm sure the listeners learned a lot.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Had a good time.
again, where can people find you? Where can people find your stuff? Where can people listen to this awesome podcast that you can't see my hat because it's starting to fade off with my background now?
Yeah, Shaving Points Podcast. It's mostly football. Like we talk about football probably like 90% of the episodes. We'll have a little bit of basketball in there once the playoffs come, but we put out all our picks at shaving-points.com. We have a college basketball model that is at the top of the tally site rankings and has been all season. So go check that out if you're into betting on college basketball. It has steered me right a lot this season and my co-host Jay. You can also hear me talking exclusively Bears on the Bears on Tap podcast, and you can find my Bears-centric writing at ontapsportsnet.com.
And definitely that's where you could go find this awesome Excel sheet too. I'll make sure when you get the Excel sheet, download it separately and save a file. You can't edit the original for obvious reasons, because if you edit the original, then you would ruin it for everybody else. But that's
I appreciate you putting that out there, actually. I answer about like 500 emails with that, like, almost that exact response.
I can't access it. Why wouldn't it let me do anything? Because like, you got to save it separately.
Yeah.
But that's all we have for tonight. I'm going to go catch up on the combine, see how Will Anderson did, because now he's getting closer to the top of my board after certain events. But, you know, bear down, everybody.
Yeah, bear down.